Jesse, this is the longest 5 seconds.
I got a little flash that we're live.
Okay. Okay, welcome to A3. Sorry about that little communication glitch on my end there. I am Alan Friesen, the acapellist, and with me is Brother Scott Sweetman. How you doing tonight, Brother Scott?
I'm really happy to see you. You're looking good. You're looking happy, as usual. I love that our show almost always starts with you and I laughing.
Yeah,
I
was that's a good thing. Tonight, I think this is it. Where are we getting the echo back from anyways? Are you hearing that? No?
No, I'm not. Is it coming from my end?
I don't think so. I don't know. Oh, there it went away. It's hey. Okay, I don't
is
hear
that
it
better?
Anymore. Yeah, perfect. Okay, so tonight, Scott, you and I will have a little journey about my journey into Ayurvedic medicine. I have had so much fun learning this. Oh my goodness, it's been quite a venture. In the notes for the thing, the little prompt there, I put in about where I watched that movie, first of all, that movie, The Natural Law, it's called. Mm-hmm. And in the movie The Natural Law, it was by a gentleman, a young East Indian man who achieved financial success early on in his 20s. And then he went on to, you know, then his health started to suffer. And basically, he went to doctors and they were prescribing more and more powerful drugs. And he was just felt like he was dying, like in his early 30s kind of a thing. And he just couldn't kind of figure out what to do. And the medical system was not of much help to him in terms of assisting him. So then he turned to ancient wisdom through the Ayurvedic wisdom. And that, you know, this is something that's been around for like 10,000 years, right? And then after that, I went and saw an Ayurvedic practitioner in Calgary. And she was lovely, had a nice little chat with her. And we had an hour session and she prescribed, wrote things out. She wrote it all just like longhand. I can barely read it. Like, I think I have 50% of it. But anyway, she's been so kind. I send her like 3 emails to clarify, what did you mean with this here? And she said, oh, this is what I said to you. I said, oh, okay. So, and then I took a course on the commune. I have this learning platform called onecommune.org. It's by this Dr. Zach Bush, and there's just like tons and tons of courses. But I had this one course on Ayurvedic medicine, and it was by this. I'm going to just show you, present this screen here. Present share screen. Oh, what? No, that's not it. Hang on 1 second. I'm not on the right screen. Oh, yeah, I have to be there. Of course, I can't be there and share at the same time. Let's try that one more time. All right. Share screen. Bum, bum. Okay, this shouldn't be that difficult to do. All right. Come on. Where is it? There it is. Okay, there it is. All right. I have been criticized many times recently. Woo-hoo! Too damn many windows open. But Ayurvedic nutrition with this goddess, Nidhi Panja. Oh my goodness. What a teacher she is, and she is just like love and presence mixed together. And she's very, very, has a lot of wisdom and a lot of amazing insights to share. So I took the course that she offered as well. And then in that, I've went through and changed a lot of practices now already. This has only been, I took this course when I was in Red Deer with Carole at the horse show. And then I've adopted some of the things right away. And then there's more that I plan to do, but it's not easy. It's going to take some jiggering in my life to make this happen. But basically, here's kind of my summary. And you know something about Ayurvedic medicine, so you can correct me if I'm going awry here. No. But here's what I learned from her. We are warm and moist. That is our nature as human beings. These bodies are warm and moist. They come from a warm and moist place. Your mother's womb is where you came, and that was a warm and moist place. And then we arrived in this world, and then we have all the external factors that we face, you know, whatever the weather is, the elements, you know, those kind of things. But if we can eat and do practices that encourage that warm and moist environment in a proper balance, we can have perfect health. And with perfect health, disease has no place. Disease has no way to catch hold, if you will. So there's basically five elements, and we are that are in nature, and we're part of nature. And those elements are earth, wind, fire, water, and what's the word I'm trying to say? It's spirit, ether, which I'm seeing is the same thing as spirit, right? Same thing. So we come from spirit through our mother, and then we live in this world that has earth, water, wind, and fire. And then when we are done, we will return to ether. We will return to spirit, kind of a thing. But while we are here, as much as we can keep those elements in check, in balance, then we can enjoy really good health, right? And I'm going to show, this time I got the share figured out. It's going to work this time. I'm going to share with you this little element. Yeah, exactly. Thanks for that. So here's this, with the course, I had this book as well, this workbook as well. What she says. Earth, the quality of earth, dense, heavy, has structure, has texture. What does it do? It builds tissue. It adds bulk. As a child, we need lots of earth in order for us to grow and develop and that kind of thing. So what's that mean? Lentils, nuts, dense grains, meats. Water, what's the quality? Fluid and moist, makes malleable, softens, allows flow, cools. So what is that? Ghee, which she actually pronounces it key, coconut water, squash, honey, those kind of things are water. And then fire, what is the quality? Sharp, hot, penetrating. So its function is supports transformation and metabolism. And what are the examples? Ginger, long, pepper, turmeric, and other spices. Wind, what is wind's quality? Light and dry. Lightens, dries out, can be gassy. And then what's their examples? Raw veggies, low fat foods, and popcorn. And so this is kind of where the foods and the elements, then you basically combine those foods in order to keep yourself in that warm, moist state kind of a thing at all times. If you have too much of them, then you have to eat the foods that will allow you to get back into balance, right? And when you're back into balance, you are healthy and you maintain good health. And like I said, disease has no place, right? She is a third generation Ayurvedic practitioner. And some of the things she says, like she's quoting stuff that's from Sanskrit from like 8,000 years ago, right? You know, she comes up with these zingers, right? So one of the ones, this one here, this one really caught my attention. She had a quote, and it was from like 8,000 years ago. And she, of course, did it in the original language, and then she translated it. And what she said was, a man who stands when he eats, death is on his shoulder, or death is right behind him. I'm like, oh, I stand when I eat all the time. So I don't stand when I eat anymore. No. Yeah. She actually advises that when you eat, and this is a little harder to do than you'd think, you should sit cross-legged. Well, like most chairs, it's kind of hard to sit cross-legged on most chairs, right? So actually what I do now, I have a little pillow that I keep in the kitchen, and I put it on the floor, and I go sit cross-legged on the floor when I'm eating, right? And then further, when I'm eating, like to be very, what would you call it? Reverential about your food, right? That you hold it, you smell it, you bless it. You know, you put the intention that this food is going to nourish my body. This food is going to restore my health or give me good health. This food, you know, how important it is that you're consuming it. And food and beverages, it's not just food. So that's what you do. So I've been doing that as of late. And the other thing that I did is I bought a spice box to put all the spices in because she had a spice box. Wonderful. So I have a spice box. And I cannot get over how much I enjoy just smelling the spices. I pop the lid on the spice box and just like.
That traditionally, that's part of a bridal trousseau. I know.
Bridal trousseau. Tell me more. What's that?
Yeah, the spice box. We had a wonderful staff member in one of our schools in Japan, and she was a practitioner. And we were invited over a number of times, and she had this wonderful wooden box, and we commented on it. And she said, "Oh, that's my spice box." She said, "When we get married, our moms or our aunties or some reverend female elder in our family will give us a spice box, and it's sort of populated with the basic spices that the women will need to keep their family healthy and happy and cook good food." Yeah. Nice. So it's really cool tradition. And I know what you mean by the smell. It's wonderful.
It is. Well, and you know, speaking of smell, another thing that she was talking about is jasmine, the scent jasmine.
Oh, yeah.
So I bought some jasmine. I keep it in my car. And then every morning I put a little bit on my wrist, rub it together, do one of those. I can still smell it. It's just a delightful smell. And so that's what I'll do every once in a while. I'll just give myself a little sniff of the jasmine. And it's beautiful. I just love that.
Don't do that at stoplights, buddy. The guys beside you in the car will think you're crazy smelling yourself.
That's probably true. Yes, exactly. Although, you know what? I think I'm trying to reinvent social norms.
Nice.
My bride was telling me the other day, I was saying, you know, it's funny. When I sing, when I'm in the grocery store, you know, people just look the other way. Kids are interested, but nobody else is interested.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
He says, yeah, that's because it's like out of whack with social norms. I said, okay, fair enough. I'm going to try and make that a social norm. I think we should all sing. I think we should sing more. So,
I agree. Excellent. Yeah,
thank you. By the way, on that vein, the other day I was walking by, what's it called? Festival Square downtown.
Yep,
on
the new one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. The new one there. And you know how there's the stage and it's always set up there.
Yeah.
So I was going over to have lunch and I had a few minutes. So I jumped on the stage and sang a couple songs and.
Oh, wonderful.
People stand around and they gave me a little applause. It was beautiful. So anyways, yeah.
That's a great use of that space. That was a really cool idea of the city to make that space there for.
It is. It is. And you often see like people performing there and that. I think it's beautiful. It's a great, great space. I love it. So anyways, I've adopted some things that are Ayurvedic in nature, and I intend to adopt more to get that balance, right? The balance between the elements, of which they're the elements of nature and we're part of nature. And how do I get more connected with nature in that way? And to show appreciation, gratitude for the food you're eating, to be present for that. You're not watching TV. I'm not standing anymore. I'm sitting when I'm eating because I don't want death standing behind me. You know, that caught my attention, that one. So the whole process in terms of being more engaged, being more present, being more grateful, grateful even that I have food, right? I mean, there's some people that they get one meal a day or they get no meal for like.
Even right here in our community, right? That it used to be, we thought that was something that happened overseas. No, it's here, right here in Lethbridge with us, right?
Exactly. I think we've chatted about this before, like 47% of the indigenous children that live in our community live in poverty. And, you know, often the only meal they get is the meal they get when they go to school, right? That's provided through the school programs. Mindful Munchies, I believe, is what it's called. So anyways, just the practice alone of being mindful, being present, being grateful while you're consuming that food, smell it. Now, she also recommends you eat with your hands. Oh, I'm having a tough time with that, I got to tell you. It's no problem if you're eating a burrito, but, you know, if you're having soup, that certainly is a challenge, right? So, yeah. So, but I'm trying to figure out how to do that as well. I think that'd be good. Like, you know, you can have rice and then you have what you dip it in, but that's always pretty liquid, right? So, yeah. So,
and there's a whole bunch of cleanliness rules that go along with that, right? Like there's not, there's, it's not, and that's where I think culturally sometimes we have trouble with things because they're out of context, right?
Right.
In that people who eat with their hands culturally don't do other things with that same hand, right? So
they don't do things. Right. Well, so yeah. Wait a minute. I thought you just got to wash your hands first. What? Tell me more. What's the extra about here involved?
Well, going to the bathroom, for example, you never wipe the hand you eat with, right? That's very cultural. So, and that's, you know, in cultures where these types of dietary cultural norms are the norm, children are taught from a very young age. So it's automatic. They don't even really think about it. But, you know, in terms of the hand that they eat with is never used for doing things that would be considered dirty, even though, of course, you can wash your hands. We have to remember a lot of these cultures that come from don't have access to clean running water.
True.
Right. So washing up like we do, you know, soap everywhere, water, hot water on demand is a luxury that we enjoy. But yes, it's certainly not common throughout the world.
Yes. And one other thing that I've changed in my practice as well is that no cold or ice water, room or warm water. So in the morning, I make like hot water with some lemon in. And just lemon, and then I'd put a cinnamon stick and throw it in there as well. Then that's what I drink throughout the day, and that's what I drink before I eat. And the thought is that kind of stimulates your Agni, and your Agni is, if you will, your digestive fire, right? If you eat too much food that is too earth concentrated, you put out the digestive fire. Mm. If you eat two foods that are too much wind, it kind of makes the fire erratic. Like as you'd see if you had a nice burning flame and a wind gust would make it erratic and not smooth and even kind of a thing, right? So anyways, I've been doing that as well. Having my lemon water, warm lemon water, and I don't drink anything cold. In the restaurant, often they want to serve you cold water. And what I just say is, hey, can I just have some hot water with some lemon in it, please? Mm-hmm. And way nicer on your digestion and to keep you in that warm, moist balance that we're trying to achieve kind of a thing, right?
That's really interesting.
And then using the spices appropriately to, you know, create that balance. And one thing, do you know what ghee is? Are you familiar with ghee?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. I've never used it before. And I thought, well, I'm a vegan. Like vegans don't eat, you know, butter. And it's a clarified butter is what it is. But I've been doing it now because, you know, Nidja say to. So I said, okay, Nidja, I'm on it. So I'll do it. So anyways, what I do in my coffee, and this, you've seen all the things on the internet about coffees where you put butter, you know, you buy the coffee that has the blah blah blah.
Yeah, I think Mongols put rancid butter in their tea and coffee.
Rancid.
Yeah, it's, and that's tradition. Apparently it tastes wonderful.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, so on a similar sense, then now I've been using ghee. So when I have, and I've been only having one cup of coffee in the morning now. So one cup of coffee, little bit of ghee in it and some cardamom. So that's the spice that I add to that. And the idea is that otherwise coffee is too hot and that puts you out of balance. But if you have a little bit of ghee with it or ghee, she pronounces it ghee actually, ghee and cardamom with it, then that moderates that, you know, and then makes it more palatable, makes it more acceptable for your body to function at its optimum, right? So I've been doing that, and oh my goodness, I thought this was a crazy idea, but I'm in. She talks about sesame oil being such a, that you put it topically, sesame oil that you use on your body. And so I've been using sesame oil, and every night I tell my bride Corolla, let me give you a foot rub with sesame oil, which I do, and that's a pleasant thing, pleasant for both.
She's a hard-working person, so probably any care is appreciated. She works hard.
Exactly. And obviously it moisturizes your externally your feet as well. But they even talk about putting that on your joints. So I will put it, if you know, I encourage her and I use it on my knees and my shoulders and that kind of thing, this sesame oil. And I bought a bottle of sesame oil. I've been using it now for like a week, and I've used like this much out of the bottle. It's like it seems to go forever, right? Mm-hmm. And the whole applying it in the evening on your feet and rubbing it in kind of a thing, I know it's helped my sleep. Like my sleep is better because of it, and my energy seems better as well, and my mood seems better. So anyways, and it's sesame oil. I think the thing's like, it was $3 for a bottle like this kind of thing. And yeah, it's
you had mentioned joints, Al. Have you ever heard of an organization called the National Center for Complementary and Integrative Health?
I have not.
They're from the UK, yeah, and they put out a lot of interesting. They're very open to what they call complementary medicine, so they're very careful never to say that, you know, Western style medicine is wrong. Just that there's lots of traditional medicines that can be a complementary. Or not necessarily an alternative. They use the word integrative. So I like their philosophy. They're saying, you know, like, go to your doctor, get your meds, get your surgery, but also look into other traditions, other types of healing that could be complementary or be integrated into that program. So
yeah,
they're science-based. They fund some research. They're very interesting. I looked up Vedic medicine and their sort of take on it, and they had some interesting quotes. Of course, the first thing they do is they say, look, there's no proof that this is a cure to anything. And they always say that because it's very rigorous in law in different countries about what, you know, in Canada, we're fighting over what can be approved right now. There's an issue with Ozempic. Right. A shortage for diabetes and the treatment of all sorts of things. And there are all alternatives, but none of them are approved yet. So an Ozempic isn't approved for weight loss, although that's used for that and a lot of other things. So they're careful. But then it goes on to say in the study that there have been studies of Vedic treatments. I always worry I pronounce it wrong, because if you look at the spelling, it looks like it should be pronounced far more difficultly than that. But anyway, studies that...
Let's pause there. I pronounce it Ayurvedic. Isn't that the way to pronounce it? Ayurvedic?
Well, it's A-Y-U-R-V-E-D-I-C.
Yes.
So Ayurvedic is how sounds in my head. But you know more than I do. I bow to your experience.
I think there's an R that you're making silent that is part of it, I think. Ayurvedic, I think, is how you pronounce it. I think, but I don't know. Either way, we know what we're talking about. So
yeah, and it's in my ear, I pronounce the R.
Oh, okay, cool.
So I don't know. Anyway, it doesn't matter. We know what we're talking about. It's in our notes. It's up on the screen.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, and so there were clinical tests. 2013, a clinical trial compared to Ayurvedic formulations of plant extracts against the natural product glucosamine sulfate,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
And then the drug celecoxib,
okay,
for knee osteoporosis. And the results of all four were almost identical. They were very similar.
Wow. Right?
Yes. And so take away with that from you will. And then there was a 2011 study, rheumatoid arthritis, again, contested against methotrexate, a traditional drug prescribed for the treatment of arthritis, and Vedic cures. And again, similar results for the people that went through the test. They're quick to point out these are small tests, that they, you know, the money is not behind proving these like a new drug, because we've talked about it before. If it doesn't pay, it doesn't play, right? So there's just not. But in the smaller tests that organizations can handle, it's pretty positive that certainly there's not, there's no reason to dismiss it out of hand, right? There is a warning that some products ordered over the internet that are sold as Ayurvedic medicines have high levels of mercury and some with arsenic. So there is a warning to be, like, if you're seeing a practitioner that's legit, you're pretty safe. It's like I wouldn't order my blood pressure meds from, you know, drugsrus.com/ you know, Korea or North Korea.
Discount drugs, get it here.
Yeah, kind of thing. But my point is that when you go digging into it, it's, I mean, it comes out of a religious tradition, which some people will get nervous about that. But as you said, you know, this has been an established tradition. And I found documents dating back to like the 2nd century BC, you know, so like you say, a really long time. That's, and a lot of the tradition was oral, passed on. So in the tradition, it comes from Brahma, from the god, to disciples, and then it's, you know, been studied and passed on. So some people get a little iffy because it's associated with religion or Hinduism, but it's been practiced as a medicine, as a discipline for centuries, separate from the religious. I won't say separate, that's difficult. That's like saying Western medicine isn't founded in Christianity, which it clearly is, right? So yeah, it's interesting though. I found that interesting that there is support, that there is not just, you know, my second cousin's sister, Mary, tried this and said it worked. Like, legitimate organizations have put time and money into this that aren't connected with the religion or the tradition and found some positive results, which I think is interesting. And you've found some positive results.
I have. And what am I doing? Just being more present when I eat, really, is what I've done. Adding a little bit of spice that I wasn't using before that I'm using now, a little bit of ghee, that kind of thing, or ghee. And I felt like I feel better for that practice. Now, is it a placebo effect that I'm occurring? Maybe, but there's absolutely no downside to it, right? If I was to take a drug, like if I had rheumatoid arthritis and I take a drug, that drug's going to have, you know, a paragraph of side effects. Could do this and this and this and this.
Pages
of side effects, exactly. Yeah. Whereas if I took a little bit of spice, yeah, there's not going to be a side effect unless I take like huge doses or something goofy. But it's, you know, to take a naturally occurring substance that grows and to add that into your diet a little bit and just to see what the impacts are. Oh, yeah. Speaking of that, oh, I got to tell you this. A lot of this involves being like a student of you, really, is what, you know, hey, try this and see how it works.
Which, right? You and I are big, H3 is a huge proponent. If we had a byline, that would be it, man. Learn about yourself, right?
Exactly. There's one thing, she has a little checklist here. I'm going to see if I can find this here. Oh, yeah, there's the 6 tastes as well. Oh, here, I might as well put this on, share this. Where is it? No, not that one. This one. There we go. Okay. So she has also these 6 tastes: sweet, sour, salty, bitter, pungent, and astringent. And each of these have value, right? Mm-hmm. So the idea is some foods have all 6 tastes, right? Mm-hmm. If you spice it correctly. And that is pretty amazing. So, and then what these spices do, this rasa does in terms of the function in your body, and then the examples of how you do that, right? How you cook it, etc. One thing practitioner in Calgary said, hey, never eat leftovers. Okay, that's kind of hard to do. And so, you know, so anyways, I'm trying to figure out how to get those things in, but
what was the thinking there?
Well, I don't know. I guess that, well, no, I do know. Yeah. Here's what Nidhi says. Nidhi says that in a perfect world, you would eat that produce, you'd eat that food within 48 minutes of it being harvested, within 48 minutes. And that anything where it's been processed in any way is going to start to draw away from its nutrient quality. So where we, you know, we'll get food that's come to us on a truck and it's seven
days. An airplane, a boat, and then a truck.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, that the quality of the food has suffered. She even says if you have the choice of buying the whole thing, the whole fruit, vegetable, etc., or a sliced version by the whole, because the slicing by itself will cause, you know, deterioration to have already started at the point.
Contamination. Yeah.
Cut. Yeah. So that it's at that point. So, yeah, very, very interesting. But here I
What about fermented food? Sorry, and I don't mean to take you off topic, but we talk a lot about the value of fermented food. Yes. Where does fermented food fit in here? Positive, well, negative?
The practitioner in Calgary, I said, well, I make amazing kombucha, which I do. I have amazing kombucha. And I said, you know, is that? And she said, oh, yeah, in moderation. And I said, yeah, okay. Like, I only drink 2 to 3 ounces a day. Right. By the way, every time I brew it, I probably brew, I don't know, 120 ounces. So, and if I only take 3 ounces a day, obviously I'm making a surplus. I got my fridge full of kombucha. If anybody wants to try my homemade kombucha, give me a call. I will bring you some.
Please bring some to our next meeting. I'd love to try it.
Okay, I will. It's delicious. And I have, I don't know if you know this about, I think I've probably told you this about kombucha. There's a SCOBY, right? And that is a scientific culture of bacteria and yeast. And you feed the SCOBY with black tea, tea and sugar, basically that combination. My SCOBY is like this thick. It's like the mother of all SCOBYs, right? And it just produces this amazing kombucha. It doesn't seem to matter how I mix it to put the ingredients in. It doesn't seem to matter when I draw it off, right? It's always tastes great. It always tastes different. It's like a different taste every time. But anyways, I will bring some kombucha to our next meeting.
So you've got a great SCOBY is what you're telling us.
Oh, I got the mother of all SCOBYs. It's whoo.
But okay. You can spawn SCOBY, right? Like you can take a piece of that and somebody can then turn that into it. Is that right?
Yes, exactly. How it works is that I would give you a SCOBY and a little bit of the fluid, right? And then you would add your mixture of tea and sugar, and then it would produce and it would grow and away you'd go. And for a while, though, it was making like an extra SCOBY by itself. Now it doesn't. It just gets thicker and thicker and more. Wow. So I got a special SCOBY happening, I'll tell you that. Okay, but here's the part that I kind of lost track of that I wanted to get to. On the whole student of one thing, she has a thing about you record what things are happening in your body, right?
Oh, wow.
And let me just see if I can find this. It's kind of your mood, your poop, your, there it is. The food, mood, and poop journal.
The FMP. I love
the FMP. So basically, you record what you ate, and you record your mood, your poop, your symptoms. And then the idea is that you kind of be a student of one, a student of you. And then that helps you in terms of, you know, refining, right? There's not one way, right? There's a number of ways, right? And there's no forbidden food. Everything is in moderation, and kind of if you're self-aware of how you feel after that meal, well, then you make adjustments as you go, right? And everybody's had the experience, I assume everybody's had the experience, I have, you have, of kind of having a food coma, right? You have the huge meal, you're stuffed, you feel bloated, and it's just like all you can do is lay on the couch. Like
Thanksgiving, Christmas, those are like food coma holidays. Yeah.
Exactly. So anyways, fascinating, and it makes sense, right? To be aware of your body, to one, choose foods and be very grateful, appreciative, and present when you eat them. And bless them. I see no reason why we have started the practice of saying, bless this food for our body's use. Amen. And, you know, it doesn't have to be a half an hour thing, just that this is something that you are encouraging or have the intention that this food is going to be healing for you and encourage your best functioning of your body. So I love that.
Yeah. We use Itadakimasu, which is, as I said, we are Christian, so you know, when I'm with my extended family, we always say grace before we eat. It's just a normal part of our house. But in my nuclear family in Japan, They say itadakimasu, like when you go to a restaurant, wherever. And it's a very short prayer. It's basically saying, you know, thanks for this food. And it's, again, cultural, and it just happens before every time people eat. And I think it's quite wonderful because, you know, it's not conspicuous. It's not that I'm ashamed of saying grace. And if, you know, if we're in a restaurant and with the family, then that's what happens. But it's not in anyone's face either. It's not going to offend anyone. It's just really fast, simple. It's acknowledging that something both biological and spiritual is happening, right?
Nice.
Because whenever you eat, life is being transformed. The life of that plant or animal is being transformed to your life. And then your life is transformed into other energies, right? So, I think it's a very positive thing.
Ajidanamasu.
Itadakimasu.
And is that the whole prayer? That's it?
Yeah.
And it basically means thank you for this food or bless this food for our body, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I was talking, you and I are both members of Fish and Game. Gentleman who was talking about harvesting an animal and that he would, you know, when he's harvested the animal, then he would, you know, basically thank the animal for giving its life for his nourishment and well-being kind of a thing. Right.
Twins always do. And they talk to it. Like when they're taking the carcass back, they talk to it the whole time. Like
do they?
Oh, yeah. And it was the first time they went hunted. It's nothing we discussed. They just did it naturally. They both, when they got their first deer, said a thank you to the animal and to God. And they don't tend to be. We didn't raise them in a particular tradition. And then they talk to the animal about their life. Thank you for all of the your experiences that, you know, we're going to use to feed our family. And it was really touching, brought a little tear to my eye. And they've always done it. When they harvest an animal, they give thanks and they talk to the spirit, I guess, of that animal as they're taking it back to the truck. So,
okay. And so this was not something you taught them, coached them. They just, oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah,
that's
nothing beautiful. Nothing from my tradition at all. Like I said, we raised on a ranch. Shooting things and eating them was just like putting on your boots in the morning. Like it's from the time you grew up, that was just part of life, right? You're going to have livestock, you're going to have dead stock. And so I never really thought about talking to it about them because they were born in Japan and raised there. So we did go to temples, you know, when someone passed away or something like that. But yeah, never. They will ask questions sometimes and I'll explain it to them, of course, because I think it's good. But yeah, completely organic, nothing we talked about at all. They just spontaneously both did it. And the conversation back is quite wonderful to just quietly listen to. And they're just chatting with the spirit, I guess. I don't know. I've never really quizzed them about it because I don't want them to stop.
Wow. I credit good parenting right there.
or just lack of bad parenting. I don't...
Nice.
I don't know. But yeah, I think that's a tradition, you know, and you were talking about giving thanks for food.
Yes.
When I came back and, you know, was dealing with all the issues and stuff, to get into the bariatric clinic in Edmonton, you had to go through these basic nutritional courses or whatever. Like there was a bunch of hurdles you had to jump through, right?
Right.
Before the doctors would see you. And so one of the courses was talking about how we have a culture of, we stuff our faces without even thinking. We're watching TV, we're working, and we're just like hammering back the calories. We could be eating anything, like, you know, the wrapper on the meal and not even realize that we just ate paper because we don't even think about what we're putting on our mouth.
Yes, very well said. It becomes a habit, especially when you're like watching TV, sitting on the couch or something, you just keep putting stuff in your mouth and not considering it, not being mindful while you're eating, right?
And they were saying that this was one of the big causes that leads to obesity in children is that people don't sit at the table anymore.
Yes.
People, you know, they don't sit around and the purpose is consuming that food. Everyone just eats with the TV on and everyone watches their favorite show together, or not even together. Sometimes the, you know, the kids just grab their plate and go down to their room and play games or do whatever.
Or everybody, if they are at the same table, everybody's looking at a screen while they're eating, right? Yeah.
And it said that that habit alone, and I thought it was interesting when you're talking about how your practitioner in Calgary was saying, you know, be mindful of every bite and everything you take, because, you know, the science, you know, in that I experienced in Calgary was exactly the same, that one of the fundamental problems with our obesity is that we don't even think about what we're eating. We just, you know, as long as it hits those bells, sugar, salt, you know, you know what I mean? Yep. If it gives us a pleasant feeling, releases serotonin, we'll just keep hammering that in and watching our TV show.
Yes. And actually, speaking of that, it's like you queued this up for me, Scott. Thank you so much. See, everything is moderation is good, right? From what you consume, but how you consume it. So it says, don't eat very cold foods. Don't eat very hot foods. Don't eat in a hurry. Eat very, very slowly. Don't eat while you're standing up. I was guilty of that. Don't eat while walking. I was guilty of that. Don't eat while emotionally upset. Mm, and then don't eat while watching an emotionally disturbing movie or TV, right? That all of those would draw away from proper digestion and to having that food be helpful and helpful in your bodies, right? So, yeah.
They always say never go shopping for groceries when you're hungry, because yes, you'll always overbuy, and you'll buy, apparently through actual studies, you'll buy things less healthy if you're hungry, because your body is trying to tell you that it wants a quick fix, right? So
yes,
you know, extra cookies, extra biscuits, extra, you know,
yes,
carbs, sugars, etc.
So a lot of this, I've heard this, I don't know how many times, that disease is really your body telling you to pay attention, that something mm-hmm. isn't right, right? That, and then so the smaller the symptoms are, the quicker that you could get on it and make the adjustment that allows you to enjoy good health. Mm-hmm. So they have this thing called AMA. And AMA is toxic waste that your body can accumulate as a result of undigested food that sits mm-hmm. and ferments in your channels. In the long term, these toxins can significantly affect the ecosystem of your body, give rise to inflammation, free radicals, autoimmune disorder, and other diseases. And wow. So how do you know you have AMA? Is you look if you have a thick coating on your tongue, if you have strong cravings for sugar, junk food, or fast foods, mm-hmm. if you have foul breath or foul smelling sweat, foul smelling flatulence, foul smelling stools, gray lackluster skin, brain fog, skin tissues, sluggish feeling, jolted by loud sounds, frequent foul smelling burps, and unrestful disturbed sleep. And so the thought process is, if you have this, if your digestive fire is where it should be, you can eat almost anything. And your digestive fire is like, will start to wane in like later afternoon. So your biggest meal should be at lunch, is midday. Your biggest meal should be there when your digestive fire is at its peak. So you should consume most of your calories then, and most of your food that it contains calories then, and then in the evening, something way lighter kind of a thing, right? And then I know from fasting, I fast pretty regularly, and I know from fasting, I sleep way better when I'm fasted. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I just have really, really good restful sleeps. And it makes sense. Your body's not all consumed with digesting that food, so it can just like restore, relax, and then you have great sleep. So, yeah.
That's great advice. How often do you fast, Al? I'm just...
Yeah, so normally I fast the first Sunday of every month. So mm-hmm. from Saturday night, so let's say I have my last meal on Saturday at 7 p.m., then I won't eat until like, let's say 9 a.m. on Monday. So mm-hmm. I haven't done the math on that, like 38 hours or whatever that is. So then I fast. And then during that period of time, I would just usually have just water or tea is basically all I have. And there's a whole thing on using fasting to heal. And it's like people who have like terminal cancer and they go to get a supervised fast and then they have this fast and it's like 20 days, 30 days, right?
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of that, no more cancer. It's all gone. right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I find just the monthly fast is enough to kind of, well, I think I've shared this theory with you before. I think we should fast or take a break, if you will, from everything that we do and everything that we consume. And then when we restart that food intake kind of thing, using food as the example, when we restart taking the food, then we've kind of reset our appetite and we'll find kind of what things are valuable for us, and we'll choose better and we'll choose smaller quantities as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's great advice.
Yeah. I'm going to try it. It's been what now? 10 days now. I haven't had any peanut butter, and I eat a schwack of peanut butter normally. You know, those Adam's Natural peanut butter things?
Yeah.
Like, I'll eat one of those like a week.
Wow.
Put it on like apples, put it on bread, and I just eat a schwack of it. So now for 10 days, I haven't had any peanut butter, and I think it has benefited me as well. I feel better because of that practice. So I think I'm going to stop eating peanut butter.
What motivated you to stop the peanut butter?
Well, one was they said, don't eat peanut butter or don't eat peanuts. And a lot of it, I'm told, my bride tells me that lots of times with peanuts, they will have like mold in them kind of a thing. And they roast them. And then we don't know that it's got mold in it because it's roasted, right? Mm-hmm. So anyways, that was what kind of prompted me to try it, to not eat peanut butter. Because it's, again, you take a break from something you habitually do without thinking, and then later on you can reintroduce it, but you have a lot more of a nuanced appetite for that, right? So, yeah.
That's really interesting. And I never heard anyone eat that much peanut butter ever, Al. So that's... I do know that like regular commercial peanut butter is crazy high in fat and salt, right? And
yes,
like they add
the Adam stuff is just peanuts, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, so when you get it, it's separated and you got to stir it all up. It's kind of a pain, but you have to stir it all up in order to eat it. And then lots of times you don't get it stirred totally perfect, so at the bottom part of the jar you got like peanut grit in there, you know, that kind of a thing, right?
So if somebody wanted to start this, what would be the best way for them to start, do you think, El?
This course at the commune, oh my goodness, it's an amazing course, and the practitioner is an incredible practitioner. She's just like, oh, I have myself a, I don't want to tell my wife this, but oh, I love her, she's amazing. Yeah, this gal here, oh my goodness. So this course on the commune, I don't know what it takes to take or what it costs to take an individual course, but this Nidhi Panja, she has a website, and mm-hmm. she's out in New York City is where she is. And so you could just check her out, and you could subscribe to her mailing list, her email list, and she'll send you emails about what's going on. But yeah, here it says, the granddaughter of an Ayurvedic healer and a spiritual master, Nidhi Panja, third generation Ayurvedic practitioner. She helps clients and communities move towards happier, fuller lives through the guiding principles of Ayurveda.
Where did you say she's located?
New York.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting. The picture, I don't think maybe that is New York behind her. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Wonderful. So yeah, so on the commune, and so you can either buy like a all-inclusive membership or maybe take one course if you want.
Yes, either way, you can buy, you just subscribe to one, you could have a subscription or you could just take one course. And there's just a ton of courses that are there. And so when I watched the movie, first of all, which I watched that movie twice, like, you know,
you can watch that free, right? It's on it's on YouTube or wherever.
Yeah. Just like Google the natural law. Actually, when I put the Facebook link, I put the link for the movie right in it. And that is by a value to just watch that. They have a practice in there. I don't know how I'm going to pull this off, but they have a cleansing ritual. What's it called again? Hang on just 1 second. I'll get it. Yeah, Yeah, there it is here. So I went to had a practitioner, saw a practitioner at the Heal Well Ayurveda and Panchkarma Clinic in Calgary.
Wow.
And, yeah. And the practitioner, her name is Amandeep Kator. And with that, the point, what I went to go see her about specifically was to get this Panchkarma thing happening. And this Panchkarma, oh my goodness, in the movie, they go through it and they kind of show you a little bit of it. But basically, the thought is throughout time and through, you know, this ama gets into your tissues and stores there. And then you can cleanse that from your tissues by having a massage with these special oils that they use. And then after they massaged you everywhere across your whole body, right, get you all lubed up with this oil, then they use this kind of like a poultice of herbs and such. I can't remember what's in it, but they use this poultice and then they rub that over your body that had the oil on it. And then that draws those toxins from your body kind of. Mm. And I've heard of some people say you have this Panchkarma and you like, you know, it like dials back your biological age, like 10 years. Wow. So.
And you've had that done now?
I haven't. Because basically it's like a minimum of a 5-day process.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. So it's like, when do I have time to like go to Calgary for 5 days and get lubed up by, anyways, I have not done it yet, but I'm really interested in doing it for sure.
And so, if you've got 5 days off, it better be at a horse show.
Well, that's true. That's true. And you know what, for our viewers, if any of you know how to do Panchkarma, and you're a practitioner, like I'm not looking for somebody weird here. I'm just looking for a practitioner, somebody who has some skills here, not just anybody off the street. Oh, I'll rub you. No, we don't want that. So, but basically somebody knows what they're doing. I would have that process. It's just that 5 days is a long time. And I guess if I understood the process correctly, once they do it, it is very, it draws these toxins out, but it like exhausts you, right? Mm-hmm. So day two, all you do is sleep kind of a thing, right?
You and should do a retreat, man. Why don't you take, you of all people I know deserve a little holiday. As long as I've known you, you've never really gone on a holiday. Why don't you go on a retreat and get this done?
I think that's good advice. That's good advice.
No, really, seriously. As long as I've known you, for over 10 years. I've never known you to actually take a break. So this would be great.
I did go on holidays in 2015. I went to Ireland with my bride. So, you know, there's that.
Yeah, that was the one time, but it was not a long time.
No.
No, but this would be a great chance for you to, like, I know that there's places that you can take a retreat where, you know, you go and study and practice. And I'm sure there'd be one for, I know there is. I don't even have to look. I'm guaranteed there is. There's over 250,000 dedicated practitioners in the U.S. alone.
Really?
My research, when I looked tonight, 250,000.
250,000? Is that what you said?
Yeah, 250,000.
Wow.
Practitioners in the U.S., like real dedicated practitioners, not just some guy with a jug of motor oil and a bag of weeds, but yeah. Which is the image I got when you said, don't show up at my door with some weirdo guy. But yeah. So, but a retreat would be cool. I vote that you do this for yourself. And yeah, it'd be good.
I will take that under advisement. Yes, I'm not looking for Bubba to show up here saying, I can rub you. I got some 10-30 right here. Yeah, we don't want that experience. No. So
yeah, I remember there was an ad when I first came to Lethbridge. There was an ad in they used to have like in the newspaper, and there was an ad for some guy who was advertising that he would come to your hotel room and like rub, I don't know what, I can't remember, canola oil or something. Like it was some weird fetish kind of deal. And it's like, really? Some person is going to say, oh yeah, that sounds cool. Here's my, you know, hotel room. Come on up. And, you know, it's like, boy, remember the Craigslist killer in the, what was it? 80s, 90s.
Oh, I don't.
Something like that. Yeah. So anyway, contact Al unless you're a real practitioner.
But I appreciate your advice about the Panchkarma. I should find a way to take those days and do that.
5 days, man. That's all. For you, you can do it.
Yes. And actually, I was looking. There is somebody in, there's a massage therapist in Lethbridge, and I contacted her, but she doesn't do that panchkarma. But I'm looking for somebody who does panchkarma. But yes, you're right. I could go somewhere, take 5 days, you know, and have that treatment. And I think it would be lovely.
I think you'd love like the culture experience too. Like if you, you know, went into a culture where it was, you know, more widely practiced and where they were set up to share the food and the experience. Oh, we could just talk about that for 2 months after you got back.
All right. You know what? I'm going to take that under advisement, Scott Sweetman. I appreciate that. We should probably wrap this up. Hey, how long have we been talking?
We should. Yeah. Exciting topic. Thanks for sharing so much tonight, Alan. It was really good. Really, really interesting. So good. For my very good friend, the acapellist Alan Friesen, and myself, Scott Sweetman, be a student of yourself and come back and see us next week. Same time, same place. Thanks very much, everyone.
Get a Matson. Keep well.